Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, June 9th, 2015. Negotiations resume in Addis to set the agenda for new peace talks on South Sudan. The head IGAD mediator said in the last round that there is no time to waste.
The whole world is watching the conflict in South Sudan, and we call on IGAD, the AU, the United Nations, and all international partners to join us in calling for an end to this conflict now.
And what one analyst says about South Sudan's judiciary system and its ability to address human rights abuses.
Moving forward, I think whatever approach is taken, we have to think about the long-term development of the judiciary as, you know, a tool of peace building and as something that contributes to stability.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Negotiators for the government and rebels are meeting in Ethiopia in an effort to end the country's violent political conflict. It's been 3 months since talks broke down after negotiators failed to meet an earlier deadline. Now, as Marta Vanderwolf reports for VOA from Addis Ababa, the factions are looking at another deadline next month.
Once again, delegations from South Sudan's government, the rebel opposition, and the former detainees are meeting to find a solution to the crisis sparked a year and a half ago when President Salva Kiir had a political fallout with his former deputy, Riek Machar. South Sudan is expected to form a transitional government of unity by July 9, the country's fourth anniversary of independence. But with just 1 month to go, it is not clear this deadline will be met. The last round of talks ended in early March without any kind of agreement, and the current agenda has to be finalized. Monday's talks amounted to consultations on ways forward and a new negotiating mechanism, also known as IGAD Plus. IGAD is the East African bloc that has been mediating talks throughout the conflict. IGAD Plus would now include the African Union, European Union, Britain, the United States, Norway, and China as new members. Lead mediator Siyu Mesfin of IGAD underscored at the last round of talks that the fighting parties must not fail to find a lasting peaceful solution.
The whole world is watching the conflict in South Sudan, and we call on IGAD, the AU, the United Nations, and all international partners to join us in calling for an end to this conflict now.
Several ceasefire agreements have been signed and broken since January 2014. UN Security Council approving sanctions also failed to stop the hostilities. Fighting has flared ahead of these talks, especially in the major oil-rich Unity State. Thousands have died, more than 2 million displaced. 300,000 people alone have taken refuge in Ethiopia. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
The conflict in South Sudan is expected to be one of the main topics covered by Africa's leaders meeting at the African Summit in Johannesburg. They'll also be discussing conflicts in Burundi, Mali, and Nigeria. Analysts say the continental body has made some strides in dealing with conflict, but needs to do much more. VOA's Anita Powell has more on that story from Johannesburg.
Women's empowerment is what the banners say outside the AU summit, being held this week in Johannesburg. But as usual, conflict, both political and civil, is likely to dominate discussion as African heads of state meet for the twice-yearly summit. Analysts from the Institute of Security Studies gathered in Johannesburg Tuesday as AU officials met, behind closed doors, a few blocks away. Analyst Lisa Lovodrin says talk of ongoing conflicts and political standoffs are likely to dominate the event.
Basically, many of you have attended AU summits before. The theme often eclipsed by the more urgent peace and security issues.
This year, those include political unrest in Burundi as the longtime president attempts to run for a third term, political and ethnic conflict in the new nation of South Sudan, and the ongoing threat of Boko Haram insurgents in Nigeria. Add to that the older conflicts in Somalia, which hasn't had a stable government for more than two decades, Eastern Congo, which has been mired in miserable conflict since the 1990s, and the continuing fallout from the 2011 downfall of Libya's longtime leader. Analysts note that in recent years, the AU's Peace and Security Council has evolved into a more powerful organization than it was before, and has mobilized faster than ever before to react to conflicts. But analyst David Zumano says African leaders are not moving fast enough to counter one of the emerging trends on the African continent: longtime leaders attempting to change their constitutions to hold on to power. That trend, he predicts, will be a key driver of future conflict.
I am of the opinion that the legal framework that we put in place is not helpful to stop the third-term debate in countries. If African leaders do not speak out early and decisively against that attempt, because the next cause of instability or war will be particularly the decision of leaders to hang on to power.
But he noted things have improved since the AU was first founded in 1963. This year alone has seen unexpectedly peaceful transitions of power in formerly conflict-prone nations like Nigeria and Lesotho.
Seriously speaking, I think Africa has made some progress in the democratization process. I'm looking at Africa from 1960 to 2000 and counting almost 89 successful military coups as a way of changing power on the continent. Then I look at Africa from 2000 up to today and only realize that we only have 6 military coups. That's a progress. Which means you have less presidents killed and you have less general coming to power. It also means that democracy has become the language in town.
The leaders begin meeting on Saturday. They will be led by the AU's current chairman, Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe, himself in power for more than 3 decades. Burundi's president, Pierre Nkurunziza, is not expected to attend. The last time he left his country, in May, a top general tried to overthrow him. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
South Sudan's assembly today was presented with a report on what happened to more than $600 million worth of letters of credit. The letters of credit, or LCs as they're known, were issued to business people who said they needed U.S. dollars to import essential goods to South Sudan. Lawmakers say it appears that some of the money from the LCs simply vanished instead of being used to help the people of South Sudan. Philip Thon Aleu has the story for VOA from Juba.
3 weeks ago, lawmakers asked 5 specialized committees to put together a report on the issuance of letters of credit by the Ministries of Finance and Trade. Gonyi Makwaj, the chair of one of the committees, presented the report to lawmakers today. He told lawmakers that a large part of the problem is that there is no single authority that oversees letters of credit. That makes it hard to track who gets them, he says.
For example, the Bank of South Sudan reports on block allocations, while the public institution and agencies responsible for the management of LCs report on individual allocations, which means that no joint report and assessment was made on who delivered, who received LC, and who did not.
Makwai says that under the letters of credit system that was introduced in 2012, the central bank was supposed to issue LCs to individuals, companies, and government agencies. Those LC recipients were then supposed to use the fund they had been allocated to import essential items to the country at affordable prices. But Makwai says
the criteria set up by the High Committee and the Ministry of Trade, Investment and Industry were not strictly followed. There were no clear monitoring mechanisms put down for follow-up on who delivered and who did not.
Makwai also says data provided to lawmakers about how much money was released to merchants or companies varies from one government institution to another. Makwai recommended that the issuance of LCs be returned to the central bank. But he says if that happens, the central bank must do a better job of reporting to parliament about how LCs are managed and allocated. Makwai says government officials have admitted there is no monitoring system for individual businesses to ensure that goods are delivered to the country. He says the National Audit Chamber needs to investigate the matter further.
The National Audit Chamber is directed immediately to audit LCs upon the adoption of this report by the August House as from the year 2014 to April 2015 and report to the August House within 60 days.
But Grace Alec Abala, an MP from Ikotos in Eastern Equatorial State, says more than $600 million that were intended to be used by business people to buy fuel, food, medicine, and other essential items for the people of South Sudan simply disappeared, and the goods were never delivered. She says this fraudulent activity is driving up prices and hurting ordinary people. She says some elected officials are fear to be part of the problem and should not be given letters of credit.
If you go to Eastern Equatoria, the bottle of water since 2005 up to today is £3. And governors are given LCs. What should we give governors LCs, honestly? What will governors do with LCs if we ask ourselves? Like you give LC to MP. What will I do with that LC? There's no meaning for giving constitutional post holder, governors, nor MPs, nor their relatives, even LCs.
Abala says the individuals who are at the heart of problem with the LCs must be held accountable for mismanaging public resources.
People have to take responsibility. You cannot be heading an institution or an agency. You do things and you just continue doing it. You continue doing it. You continue being there. And people are suffering at the expense of others being rich. Why should they do this? Well, I read, Honorable Speaker, if you read this report, somebody like me was almost crying. You cannot just play with the money like this. This is a public body. We are supposed to deliver.
David Denga Thorbe, the National Minister of Finance, says his steps have already been taken to address loopholes in the LC system. He says one official has already been fired, although he refused to accuse that official of corruption. MPs unanimously adopted the committee's report. They are determined that the investigation into how and to whom letters of credit are issued will continue, and that any individuals or organizations found to have mishandled LCs will be held to account. For VOA News, I am Pilithona Leo in Juba.
In the second part of our series on justice in South Sudan, we look at human rights abuses in the country and what legal recourse victims have, if any. South Sudan in Focus managing editor John Tanza prepared this report for VOA News in Washington.
From the beginning of the conflict in South Sudan, rights groups have reported that there have been gross violations of human rights around the country. Now, as the conflict is reignited in Unity and Upper Nile states and spreads to northern and western Bahr el-Ghazal states, rights advocates worry that even more civilians will become victims of atrocities. They say there is no guarantee that those victims will ever get justice. Mereka Jelona heads South Sudan Domestic Election Monitoring and Observation Program, a civil society group that advocates for justice in South Sudan. Lona says the country needs more options to address the crimes committed against civilians during the 18 months of fighting.
There are so many people who are hurting, but then deliberate attention have not been paid towards healing of every community and every human being who has gone through pain and who in one way or another feel victimized, feel marginalized, feel discriminated.
David Deng is the director of research at the South Sudan Law Society. He suggests a different way to bring justice to civilians who have suffered during the conflict.
Justice means different things to different people. And I think especially in the South Sudanese context, it requires a holistic approach that looks at truth-seeking and memorialization and different sorts of ways of promoting justice, reconciliation, and healing. I think that would be the appropriate starting point.
Former U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan, Susan Page, said during a public meeting hosted by South Sudan in Focus in April that United States suggested to East African bloc IGAD that a website be set up to allow citizens and civil society groups to post their thoughts about the conflict and peace process for South Sudan. She said that has not happened. The United States and other parties, including Riek Machar's armed opposition groups, have also called for a report put together by an African Commission of Inquiry on rights abuses during the South Sudan's conflict to be released. A leaked part of the 400-page report charts the violence that has rocked South Sudan since December 2013 and makes several recommendations for restoring peace. Government spokesman Michael Makui has said the African Union report should not be released until there is peace in South Sudan. South Sudanese political parties, meanwhile, think the way to ensure that justice is served to victims of the conflict is to hold a national dialogue to try to get to the bottom of what caused the conflict in the first place. But even if perpetrators of conflict-related violence are brought to justice, South Sudan has other deeply ingrained issues that need to be addressed. This includes cattle raids, child abduction, land grabbing, and corruption. Deng says many of these issues are made worse by the fact that more and more people in South Sudan are armed.
And even if you get an award through the court system, you're unable to enforce it because the courts don't have the clout to challenge people who are wielding guns. So, you know, moving forward, I think whatever approach is taken, we have to think about the long-term development of the judiciary as, you know, a tool of peace building and as something that contributes to stability.
A clerk at South Sudan's Supreme Court who asked not to be identified says there is a poor record-keeping system at the courts in South Sudan. He says some records disappear even before judges see them. For VOA News, I'm John Tanza in Washington.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Petrol stations in western Bahar Ghazal have reopened. Why did they close in the first place? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Are sports a part of your daily activities? Which sport?
Me, athletics, like running, because it can help you to become flexible. When you do some exercises, you can regain energy and you become somehow good.
No, sport is not a part of my daily activities. Probably because I'm busy with work. But aside of that, I would love to do sport.
Okay, I play football. Yes, of course. As long as I'm living, it has to be part of me. And I do it a lot.
Sports is actually part of my daily activities. I prefer playing tennis. It's a game that I started playing last year in January, and I started to like it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today, we are talking about aging and health. The older a person gets, the more medical conditions that person often has. In fact, a new global analysis of ill health and disability found that the average older adult suffered from at least 5 non-life-threatening health ailments in 2013. VOA's Jessica Berman has more.
More than 95% of the world's population has health problems. That's according to a detailed report called the Global Burden of Disease Study. It found that one-third of the world, or 2.3 billion people, live with multiple health ailments, many of which contribute to disability but not death. Teo Voss, a professor of global health at the University of Washington's Institute of Health Metrics and Evaluation, led the study. Voss says the most common causes of disability were largely age-related.
Across the world, the two largest components are the musculoskeletal problems, with low back pain, neck pain, and arthritis being very dominant, and then the mental disorders, where depression and anxiety are the biggest one contributing to the amounts of disability.
Also prominent as causes of disability in older age were iron deficiency anemia, drug and alcohol abuse, hearing loss, and dental problems. The study, published in the journal The Lancet, analyzed more than 35,000 pieces of information on disease and injury from 188 countries between 1990 and 2013. In sub-Saharan Africa, complications related to HIV/AIDS were a key driver of disability in recent times. Voss says Asian countries had the least amount of disability.
So China, Japan, Thailand, Indonesia, Singapore, they have relatively lower rates of disability. And whether that is due to more prudent lifestyles in terms of diet, less obesity, that is not so clear.
Given their toll on healthcare systems and quality of life, Voss says preventable causes of poor health have not received the societal attention they deserve. Voss says it's important not only to keep people alive into old age, but for them to remain healthy. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Petrol stations in western Bahar al-Ghazal state are open for business. Station operators closed on Sunday, anticipating a government order to drop the price of fuel from 16 South Sudanese pounds per liter to 13 pounds. Station owners said they would rather close than make no profit at all, but decided to reopen last night, saying they really don't have a choice. Demo Silva Arriello has the story for VOA.
The Wam Municipal Council issued the order on Monday, fixing prices of fuel and devising methods to prevent dealers from creating unnecessary shortages at the 11 petrol stations across western Bahar al-Ghazal state. The station owners shut down their pumps for almost 24 hours before resuming sales late Monday evening. Wam Municipal Mayor Lifio Gelego Bahara accuses petrol stations owners of hoarding fuel to create shortages and price fixing.
Of late, we have discovered that there is a great shortage of fuel in town. And also, not only that, there is a system devised by the petrol station managers to open only one station and people will scramble there so that the prices they fixed of 16 pounds is kept there. Because if they open many stations, then this price will go down.
The mayor says petrol station owners' decision to close may have been intended to try and force officials to reverse their decision.
We told them that we are going to accept only 13 pounds per liter. And they made a lot of row about it. And it seems they tried to close all the petrol stations. But that was not going to be a problem to us because as a government, of course, we shall find out why the stations are closed. And if it is a question of the price, then that's where we shall come in. And we told them, if you close the shops or the stations, we are going to inspect. And if we find fuel, we are going to charge you for hoarding. And that is also a criminal case. And they saw that things were not in their favor, so they decided to agree on our
30. Wow, station owners say imposing fuel price limits without helping to improve access to fuel supplies in the state is an unfair move. Speaking in Arabic, Bakbak John, manager of the Nile Petroleum Station in Wow, says it was a unilateral decision.
This issue we never agreed. But the government forced us. We are not agreeing because it will affect us, but they were only convincing us that this time around you will incur loss, but next time they will provide dollars and avail petrol from Nile Petroleum to our stations. If they implement and fix their price, it will be very good for us.
Buck denies that he and other petrol station operators are hoarding fuel. He says limited access to U.S. dollars to purchase petrol and poor roads are the reasons behind the price hike. But many ordinary citizens complain 13 pounds per liter is still too high. He's speaking in Arabic. Farmer Ilario Chol says he makes fewer trips to his land far outside of town because he cannot afford to fuel his Senke motorbike to travel back and forth.
If the fuel is expensive, we are not able to reach our farms so as to cultivate. The fuel should be reduced to 8 South Sudanese pounds like it was before, although we all know that our road is bad.
In addition to setting a fixed price for fuel, one municipal authority said all petrol stations should stop selling petrol to customers if it is not contained in barrels or jerrycans, unless they have a specific authorized approval from the municipality to do so. Some stations have been selling petrol in barrels and jerrycans to customers in the past. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, in WoW.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines. The Nigerian military has moved its command post to the northeastern city of Maiduguri, the birthplace of the Boko Haram insurgency. It was President Muhammadu Buhari's first major announcement regarding the Islamist extremist group, which has ravaged the country's northeast in its six-year campaign to implement strict Sharia law. In his inaugural address last month, Mr. Buhari announced that Nigeria's military command was to move from the capital, Abuja, to Maiduguri, the city where Boko Haram got its start. An Egyptian court has sentenced 11 people to death today in connection with a 2012 riot at a soccer stadium in the northern city of Port Said that left 74 people dead and injured hundreds more. The judge delivered the verdict in a court session carried live on Egyptian television. The defendants listened in locked cells in the rear of the court. Egypt's worst case of soccer violence began at the end of a match between Cairo's El Ahly and the home El Masri teams when local fans stormed the field and clashed with visiting fans. Families and friends of those who died in the violence waited outside court, some of them angry that police at the scene of the football clashes were spared the harshest of sentences. And finally, a recent audit of the U.S. Transportation Security Administration shows the agency has failed to identify 73 workers with links to terrorism. A recently released report from the U.S. Office of the Inspector General says that while the agency's multi-layered process for screening aviation workers was generally effective, the agency does not have access to terror watchlist information needed for more thorough judgment. It says thousands of records used for investigating works had incomplete or inaccurate information. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Johnny by Nigerian artist Yemi Alade. Ho ha! Yemi Alade. It's a busy baby. Johnny leave me for the Cynthia. And I don't know what to do. And he talks say I know do. The way things are they do. Johnny give you chebele. He talk say he want marry nene. Who came kedi beneme. Johnny mo, Johnny mo. I'm looking for my Johnny. Yeah. Where is my Johnny? Johnny mo. Do you know Johnny? Question. If I know see my Johnny. Johnny ah, yeah, yeah. I'm looking for my Johnny. I'm looking for my honey. This is not for me. Johnny do me funny. Johnny do me funny. He's doing me this, he's doing me that. But I know what's him on me. He go Canada, he go Tokyo. Yesterday he say he de Morocco. He dance the sequel, he sing a willow. Na lie, na lie, na Pinocchio. This one na go be. Original go be. We've been listening to Nigerian musician Yemi Alade performing the song Johnny. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We're glad you could join us today. Please tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Original.